Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is up, DMV basketball fans? Got a great one here for you today. We're going to talk George Washington basketball. They're a really interesting local team here this year. Started off really strong, kind of petered out down the stretch. And I've got the two most knowledgeable people I know about that program in here to talk to us about it and just kind of fill us in on what happened with all things GW. Got David Korn and Liam Omerku joining us. Guys, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Excited to be on, Matt. Thank you for having us. And yeah, definitely a big offseason coming up. And a lot to break down from a interesting season, to say the least, at GW.
Yeah, sure. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, like David said, it's a exciting off season. I think it's a pretty important off season. And yeah, I'm excited to kind of break it down.
For anybody listening to this, if you're a GW fan, you have seen these guys probably at every home game, it feels like. Every time I've been there, these guys are our front row and center. They know all the people. They know all the questions to ask. So, again, really just two knowledgeable follows. We'll make sure to put the social media handles and things like that in the episode description. So if you're listening to this, you'll know where to find them. But yeah, I think, guys, this just kind of, we'll have a good convo here. This is probably the team locally that I think kind of had the most, I don't know, maybe going on behind the scenes that's kind of here worthwhile to talk about. But first, we're brought to you by Stateside Vodka and their Surfside Hard Iced Teas, Hard Lemonades, and Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to place all your wagers for baseball, boxing, golf, UFC, tennis, NBA, college basketball, everything you can think of. It's the fastest and easiest way to place your favorite casino or favorite wagers in your casino and card games. You can head to the website, use your promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, for your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. All right, Liam, let's start with you. This team started out really good. Things sort of, I don't know, went off the rails at some point here during the season. What do you think happened? What went wrong? Was this just such a soft non-conference schedule and this was the team they were all along, or do you think something actually kind of like happened here to cause them to kind of skid a little bit?
You mentioned the soft non-conference schedule. I think that was a big part of it. The non-conference schedule was quite bad. They only played one true road game in the non-conference schedule, and they got throttled by what ended up being a good South Carolina team, but still. And then they had a few, and Garrett Johnson got hurt. Darren Buchanan was out for a little bit. And I think those are, even if they were two young players, they played a lot of minutes. So I think that sort of disrupted GW's sort of momentum and whatever else. They had a few kind of games where they, you know, it just kind of fell apart mid-game for whatever reason. And then I think it's like, it's a young group. So I think the kind of confidence diminished a lot. And then that kind of, it started snowballing. So yeah, there was a little bit of kind of in the moment, there was a little bit of confusion as to like what's happening. This team was good. Why are they not good anymore? And that even translated to like, even like, head coach Chris Caputo was like saying that. He was like, he said at one point, I'm just spinning the wheel, like trying to make adjustments. So that was frankly a little was kind of the response to it. But, you know, it sort of just fell apart. And, you know, there's some people that said that kind of this was the team that they were all year, but I don't know. I think it was a combination of a few different things.
Makes sense. David, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's also really important to note the overall quality in the Atlantic 10 Conference this season that also contributed to it. You know, I think I've been on record saying this. I think 1 through 15, this was the strongest conference, you know, top to bottom that we've seen in a long, obviously 15, only 2 years, it's been 15, but I think it's the top to bottom. I think this is as strong as the conference has ever been, or at least as the bottom of the conference is as good as it's ever been. There were no easy games. GW, in their final game of the season, took Duquesne to the wire at Duquesne, who, as the sixth seed in the conference, made the NCAA tournament, won the A-10 tournament, and won a game. They beat BYU. So really a lot of strong teams. And so I think that's another thing people don't necessarily get is how sort of, even though some of these losses, you know, at the time maybe seemed very winnable, like losing to Rhode Island at home, losing to LaSalle at home, like those ones you would have hoped to win. But in reality, these were all difficult games. And I think like the soft non-conference, like you mentioned, really didn't prepare this team for the difficult test that would have been conference play.
Yeah, I think I was at the Alcorn State game where they kind of struggled to beat that team. And it's like, all right, this is not a great non-conference schedule, but young guys, maybe they just need to kind of learn how to win some games. And it looked okay early in conference play. Like they lost a tough one in overtime to Fordham, but all right, got a couple wins, beat VCU, and then got that big win at home against George Mason. Like, okay, this team's rolling, because I thought that George Mason team was pretty good as well. So I thought like bigger and better things were, you know, coming here. And then that seemed like the moment where like things just like really kind of broke down for them. They got blown out by UMass. I'm not totally blown out, but didn't seem like a game they were ever really like completely in. Do you guys, is there one single moment, I guess you both kind of talked a little bit about young team and confidence and things like that, but was there an event or a moment or an injury or something that kind of started this skid for them specifically?
I think the moment that was tough was that road trip you're mentioning, where in a span of four games, they had to face UMass, Richmond, and Dayton all on the road, which I think is, you know, maybe going into the season, people didn't anticipate that being sort of such a difficult stretch of play. But, you know, looking back, those were three of the four double bye teams, three of the four top four. And you know, those games really took a toll on this team. And I don't think they were ready for those difficult road games. And I just think any sort of momentum killer like that is difficult to come back from, especially for such a young team that at a time seemed like it was just James Bishop and a bunch of freshmen. Yeah.
Liam, well, are you like, you had, Dave was just hitting on it there with this sort of notion of like one sort of super senior here and then a couple of younger guys. Did you notice anything from them from like a chemistry standpoint? Did that seem to break down to you at all? Just kind of curious, as somebody that was in there, did you see any of like a growing disconnect or anything like that?
I don't think there was any chemistry, just like any issues with chemistry. I certainly think there's other years in James Bishop's time at GW where you can point to chemistry issues. Jamie and Christian's last year, I believe there were some pretty big issues with chemistry. But I don't think that was really the issue. They all spoke, you know, positively about each other. There was, I think there was, they kind of all liked each other and got along well. It's just kind of hard because when you have a player like James Bishop, he just requires taking a lot of shots. Like that's just who he is as a player. Mm-hmm. And it's deserved because, you know, he can go out there and drop 40 points and win you a game on his own. But also if he has an off night, then suddenly you're kind of in trouble. And it became a sort of interesting dynamic because it became clear as time went on, especially as we got into conference play, that Darren Buchanan was also someone who wanted the ball in his hands and could win the game by himself with the ball in his hands in a different way. He wasn't, you know, obviously he's more of like getting to the rim and kind of finishing at the rim rather than kind of mid-range jumpers and three-pointers. But it was a bit of an interesting dynamic because you had Bishop, who was like the leader on this team. He's like one of the only older players. There was a few other grad students, but they weren't James Bishop. But he's such a quiet leader. He very much leads by example. that I think there was a bit of a struggle to get him to like be a vocal leader and kind of lead the team and do what was necessary, especially while they were in the slump, because go to the gym, like practice and play. He's not like really like the rah-rah type of guy. He's going to go out there and show the younger players that this is how you do it. This is how you be composed, all this different stuff. And sometimes that composure was, you know, you could have used a little pumping up from him. So
I actually asked him about that directly. Like, have you had to be more vocal this year? And he was sort of like, that's not really how I lead. Like, yeah, I try some, but I just do my thing. And hopefully people see that. When you have that many young guys, I think to your point, like you need somebody to be the older, louder guy in the room that sort of, hey, like this is how we do things here. And is sort of in your face about it a little bit potentially. David, is there anyone like that on this roster? Like, who was the next guy up? Was there a louder vocal leader, or was that something that was missing?
I think that would have probably fallen onto the other graduate player that Leah mentioned, or didn't mention, but Babatunde Stretch Akingbola, I think, would probably have been. He was definitely more vocal. I think anyone who watched any GW game this season would have seen whenever he like impacted a shot on the defensive end, how he would like get so visibly excited and how the team would sort of rally around that. So I think he was probably the next vocal leader, but like it was tough because even though he was a grad student, he really had such little actual on-court basketball experience because he played 4 years at Auburn. Only 1 year was he even in the rotation, and that year he was, you know, 5-10 minutes a game. And so it was tough because I just feel like there was not enough experience. So there were so many flashes, right? But again, it's just that going back to the youth, it's really difficult for young players to play a sort of cohesive team defense at the college level. You also have to consider that this year was maybe the most sort of experience all around in college basketball because of the COVID year. So these guys were going up against literal grown men, people who, Matt, I know you followed the NBA very closely. I'm sure you've seen those like graphics and stuff comparing teams to the age of the Thunder.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I know a common one this year is like comparing UNC to that. And
Memphis was another big one. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's true. Like you really are going up against like 23 and 24 year olds as 18 and 19 year olds. Or even not as 18 or 19 year olds, but guys who just haven't had as much basketball experience. And so I just think that was, regardless of the leadership aspects to it, I don't think you can make up for that. So I think that, yes, while James Bishop may not be the most vocal guy, I don't think that's what you should point to when you look at maybe an issue with this team. I just think that they were really young. They weren't able to get as much sort of experience as they wanted in the transfer portal. And this was always sort of going to be a transitionary year. And it was, with all the young talent they had coming in, I think it was, people were very surprised at the start, but I don't think that necessarily the expectations going in were that this would be a team that would win right away.
I think this is going to be interesting for Coach Caputo moving forward, is how he builds out his team. To me, this was like a very run and gun, here's what we did at Miami, you know, a heavy offensive kind of team. And it's four guys that can shoot around one guy in the middle, and he kind of rim protects for us and he's pretty mobile. But the roster construction is going to maybe have to be something that they learn from this team, right? To me, it was, you needed at least one more big physical presence other than Stretch, because anytime he got in foul trouble, like there were times they put Garrett Johnson at the five, and the A-10 was like pretty physical this year. It felt like an older league overall, like a defensive minded league. So being the team that's trying to hang 95 points on people to win every game is just not sustainable, especially if you don't like protect the rim. So they'd come down, they'd hit a tough three, and then they'd let somebody waltz to the rim for an easy layup. And it's like, yeah, three is more than two, but not if you're giving up like 65% around the rim, you know, in a course of a game. So Liam, I don't know, did you see that as well? Like, would a backup big have kind of made a meaningful difference for this team?
Yeah, I think a backup big would have made a huge difference for this team. I think also they didn't get Babatunde Akinbola. It wasn't announced that he was coming to GW until, I believe, June 17th. So they swung and missed on a lot of guys before Stretch came to GW. And part of that was because of they were kind of hamstrung by NIL, which apparently is not, they don't have those issues this year. So we'll see how they kind of figure that out this year. No, I think a backup big would have been super important. And there was there was a few guys they tried to use as a backup big. Kind of Darren Buchanan, I at some point mentioned that when Caputo was giving him the recruiting pitch, he said, like, no, like, you can be like a backup five for us. And Darren Buchanan was like, what?
Yeah, I would rather be a shooting guard.
Yeah, right. But and then he was like, okay, no, but like he's coaching to be. But yeah, I kind of think it starts with, if they were able to get someone who was higher up on their list as a starting center, then they would have been in a better position. But yeah, if you look at the roster, there was a few guys that you're like, oh, it could be a backup big. Okay, well, Keegan Harvey, he's 7 feet tall. He maybe can play center, but no, he kind of can't. He can just shoot three pointers. Or Antoine Smith Jr., like, okay, they threw him in there. He was a backup big for a little bit.
He's maybe a 6 foot six stretch big, unfortunately. Like, he was too undersized.
Yeah, he was too undersized, and just some of the ticky-tack fouls that he would commit was actually kind of impressive. Mm-hmm. How he was able to rack them up so quickly.
David, same question for you there.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Is that something that you saw as like a major flaw in how they build out this team?
I actually kind of disagree. I think that Caputo has one constant sort of a recurring theme in speaking to him about his rotations and roster construction is that I believe that his ideal group is sort of what you mentioned, Matt, with his like teams at Miami, that you saw like Jordan Miller acting as a big and didn't really have a true center. So I think that going forward, he would be comfortable running Buchanan at the five for longer stretches of play. And that's actually something I'm really curious to see how they approach this offseason, because I don't think, everyone's been seeing these lists on Twitter about people posting who they're hearing from. Yeah. And they aren't all 100% accurate. You know, they're no one knows what really is happening behind the scenes. But one thing you can get from this is you can get a good idea about the type of guys who your team is approaching. And GW really hasn't accessed, hasn't been reaching out to a lot of like pure big men. And
I've seen a lot of combo guards, it seems like.
A lot of guards, a lot of wings, and sort of some forwards. And so something I think would be really interesting to see is if we do kind of build out the roster, and GW builds out the roster the way, you know, there would be a lot of guys sort of 6'7", 6'8", who you can sort of throw in the five, who can sort of be physical and, you know, maybe don't look like the traditional big man you're thinking of, but and sort of, yeah, use their athleticism to get some rebounds, you know, still play down low and, you know, do not play with the true five. And I think that's what kind of Caputo envisions for this team. And I think if he were to sort of just like pick his perfect group, I think that's sort of how he'd play. And so I wouldn't be shocked if we do not, or GW does not get a true center in the portal, and they kind of run, I don't know if Buchanan would start at the five, maybe they start someone up, but I would not be surprised if going forward, Darren Buchanan plays a majority of his minutes at small ball five.
I think that'd be a mistake. And then he's not have like a center. Like, I mean, I get what you're saying. I do think that that is maybe how Caputo wants to build the roster, but I would not be a fan of that is what I'll say.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between, yes, he clearly wants to do it this way, which I think you're right about, David. And Liam, I think I'm with you of that would not be a good good choice, especially just some things don't translate league to league and the way certain teams are trying to play. Like, I don't think you can go into next year assuming that like Darren Buchanan will be your leading scorer and also have to guard like Deron Holmes if he goes back to school. Like, it's not that every team in the A10 has a Deron Holmes, but everybody's got somebody of that sort of bulkier build, I think. Like, even guarding an Amari Kelly at GW would have been a struggle for someone like Darren McKinn for the course of a game. And obviously you get some benefit from that on the other side, but also for a team that had some injury concerns, wasn't super deep throughout the course of the year, like, you can't afford to have your best couple guys either get banged up too much or pick up ticky-tack fouls. Like, I don't know. I'm with you that maybe that's like how he envisions like their perfect like death lineup and we want to close games that way, but got to have somebody in there to eat up 15, 20 minutes a game, I would think, if it were me.
Yeah, and so maybe that isn't Buchanan who's getting the majority of minutes at the five, but maybe a similar build to him who can also switch on defense, can pop out to hit a corner three if he needs. I think that is sort of the type of player Caputo would be looking for. And maybe you get sort of like a more traditional center to sort of start games, get you on the right foot, play physical, get a few fouls. But I really do believe the majority of this team's minutes will be played sort of small ball.
I guess I need to be unmuted for that. Ryan's asking in the chat, is Zam in the rotation this year coming up? Is that something you guys see?
Liam, do you want to take that?
I think he'll be in the rotation. But I don't know. I think this is a big offseason for him in terms of kind of his development. We'll see. I'm not really sure. He didn't really have, like, I don't know what his minutes per game average was this year. I would expect it to go up a little bit. But sort of like David mentioned, you saw flashes from him. Like, mm-hmm. like you saw from other players, like, it was clear, like, he was stepping out and hitting threes. He's obviously like a big body. I would trust him, I think, at least physically, to guard some of like the kind of big men in the A-10. Ideally, I think the coaching staff wants him to have an elevated role this year, but I wouldn't anticipate him stepping in and being like a starter. Mm-hmm. So
makes sense. Guys, I think just in general, talk about what went wrong here. What went right? Like, I mean, I feel like there were still some bright spots, and when they were fun to watch and playing well, it was like an enjoyable experience. And you thought, like, all right, there's some hope here. And I don't know, what were the things you saw as like takeaways from this year that you can feel good about, and hopefully they can carry over into next season? David, why don't you?
I think the biggest takeaway for me, obviously Buchanan's a star. I think he'll end up going into next season as one of the favorites for Conference Player of the Year. But I think one of the things that I was most encouraged by was Jacoy Hutchinson's stretch of play to end the season. You know, he was playing 35 minutes a night, scoring about 15 points a game, you know, really looking like a more experienced player than he was. And I was very happy with what I saw from him at the beginning when he was sort of playing in a backup facilitator role. And that's sort of what I anticipated he would be in the season. You know, I thought he might start some games, but I really didn't see him taking on a bulk of the scoring role. And so the way he was able to sort of shoot the ball, drive effectively, and I think he ended up being GW's best individual perimeter defender. You know, I was really encouraged by what I saw, and I think him and Buchanan will be one of the best duos in the league going forward. And they both still have 3 more years of eligibility. And to be able to build that type of chemistry with sort of a point guard and a volume scorer, I think just that potential is really, really exciting to me. And I think he's just as big a part of GW's future as Buchanan is, and they're in a really good spot with him, you know, running the offense.
Makes sense. Liam, any for you?
Sorry, could you remind me of the question?
That's okay. Any major bright spots, things that you saw that this is something we can build on moving forward, or you know, other than that kind of like Darren and Jacoy so far?
Yeah, I think Garrett Johnson is certainly a bright spot. I mean, I did not expect him, at least at the beginning, to kind of have the role that he had. I didn't even really think, like, I think John Rothstein went to a GW practice and said, like, projected starting five Garrett Johnson. And me and kind of other GW basketball fans were like, what? Like,
who?
And so I think he was definitely a bright spot. Obviously he had some injury issues with his hip, and I think maybe it becomes less of a bright spot if those are kind of recurring, if that becomes a thing and it becomes clear that this is not just something that was bothering him this year, and it's kind of going to be a longer term thing, which hopefully it won't. But it's also hard because he's like recovering from like this like cancer in his hip. So, you know, it's not just like, oh, he pulled his hamstring. You know, it's kind of a bit of a unique thing. But he was definitely a bright spot for me. It became clear to me that the coaching staff did a good job recruiting like the kind of these guys who redshirted 1 year at a different school, Garrett Johnson, Darren Buchanan, and then came to GW. Now they just need to do that with like older players, more experienced players, but kind of they sort of and that players wouldn't be able to transfer a second time. And then that was sort of thrown out the window midseason. And that was a big point of frustration for Caputo. I know that for sure. But that was definitely a bright spot for me, is that their ability to recruit these players who maybe were sort of unknown, and have them come in and develop them into contributing players.
I think that's a great call, right? I mean, they were older freshmen, both Darren and Garrett, but still freshmen. So can you get a couple juniors now to fill those same kind of roles? And Garrett was so interesting specifically, like for me, because he's someone I remember seeing like tape of coming out of high school. And it was like him throwing down dunks on people. And it's like, okay, I actually didn't know he was as good a shooter. I thought he was more of kind of a bouncy athlete type. And then this year he came in and just started like scorching the nets from three, you know, to start the year. And over the course of the year, I feel like we saw less of him making those sort of like spry athletic plays. So it didn't surprise me to see the hip stuff, you know, kind of hip soreness and things like that crop up. So hopefully not the case moving forward. I do think there's more to him there if we can kind of see the top version of him athletically. So wish him all the best. But to me, that's a pro level shooter. Like if you're 6'8" and you can move and you can shoot like that, like you're an NBA player, if you know, maybe, and at the very least like a high level overseas player. So I think that's really going to be big for them next year, is can he take a jump in year two? And if Darren makes any shots next year from the perimeter, he becomes so much harder to guard. So hopefully, you know, that's what he's in the lab working on all this kind of offseason too.
Yeah, and just more on that, the shooting, I think that's something else we saw at the end of the season, him taking more threes. I know in the conference tournament in GW's lone game there, you know, the last points GW scored were Darren Buchanan three, and he's more willing to take them. I think he's very comfortable in the corners shooting those threes, and I think if he's comfortable for more spots and just willing to take them, that'll give him more space because people have to respect him more. He can blow by defenders who sort of have to get in a bit closer to him on the outside. You know, it'll just space out the offense even more. And that 3-point shot, I mean, he showed how clearly physically dominant he was inside. And if he can get an outside portion to his game too, that's another thing I'm really excited about for next year, his potential increase in 3-point shooting. Cause if he does, you know, I think we're looking at a 20-point per game score.
Even being a little better from the free throw line, I think would go a long way for him too, because he's going to be so much more athletic than probably 95% of the people that guard him. So there were a few times last year you'd see him get to the rim and then kind of pull back a little bit or like shy away from that contact at the rim. So if he can just kind of barrel through guys and make 80% of his or 75% of his free throws, like I think that would also be kind of a big step in the right direction. Liam, Max.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Edwards is probably the only guy we've seen so far that I've kept track of that's actually definitively seeming to transfer out here. What do they lose with Max? And, you know, is there anyone on this existing roster you think can kind of replace his production right away?
Well, kind of similar to what I said before, like, I do think they did a pretty good job of recruiting wings last year. Sorry, there's a trash truck outside. Hopefully you guys can't hear that. Anyway, I think they did a pretty good job recruiting wings, and they've shown that they can recruit wings. Like Max Edwards was one of the only players that they did get out of the transfer portal, Caputo's first offseason. So I do have faith that they can kind of replace him. But he's a pretty unique player in terms of, like, he's a very good three-point shooter. He's a bit streaky, hot and cold. And then he can definitely get to the rim as well. He's a bit of, you know, I think him and Caputo maybe weren't seeing eye to eye by the end of it. So I think maybe it was a good decision to transfer for both. I'm very curious to see where he ends up. He is quite a good player. He's very fun to watch just in terms of, like, when he gets hot, dominating games. But also a lefty, which was kind of an interesting dynamic. But yeah, I don't know. I have faith that they can replace him, his production. I don't know if that player is necessarily on the team right now. But obviously, when he leaves, that opens up another spot for someone else. So they've got, I think they've got 4 or 5 scholarships open for players to replace him. So
perfect segue. David, where would you go in the transfer portal? We've talked a little bit about it here already, but just a priority number one for you. Who should they be trying to go after? Not person specifically, but position or role that you'd like to see them fill kind of as step one.
So when I'm looking at the team for next year, I have 3 guys who I think are locks for the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. Jaquan Hutchinson, Garrett Johnson, and Darren Buchanan. And so I think you need to fill out the roster around them. Again, I view Buchanan as more of a guy who I think could be a 5. I know Liam and Matt, I know you guys don't. So in my perfect world, I think you get a wing, like a true wing, which I think can be really valuable in the Atlantic 10, because I view it sort of more as a guards forwards league. So if you have a guy who's maybe 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", who has those type of guard skills and can really, you know, you can feel good about a 3, I think that's super valuable. I think that's what the coaching staff was hoping Benny Schroeder would be, but that didn't necessarily work out. So I would go for a sort of a wing, and I think an experienced guard, because again, your guards right now are Jaquan Hutchinson, Trey Autry, Christian Jones, who redshirted, and Ty Bevins, who is an incoming freshman. Again, I said how much I liked Jaquan and how I think he played above his age and above his experience this year. But again, he's still going to be a sophomore. I think if you want to, you know, if you think that you can compete next year, I think you need to get in on experienced ball handler to sort of take some pressure off Jaquan if he's getting blitzed, if he's, you know, getting the turnover bug, anything like that. So I think those are probably my 2 biggest priorities. And of course, I think big men as well. There just aren't really any. So kind of mentioned every position on the court right there. But I think my big if I had to choose one player to target, I think a wing would be the priority.
Just to follow on to that real quick, can Trey next year fill in any of that backup point guard role? Did you see anything there that he can scale up in this next year?
I don't see him as a point guard. I think he's a sort of a microwave scorer shooting guard who can sort of use his sort of energy and physicality to sort of go up against bigger threes. But unless he, you know, does those like Peyton Pritchard garage cone drills or something all offseason, I don't really see him with the type of ball handling to play meaningful minutes at the backup point guard.
Liam, same question for you. Overall, just sort of where would you go? Where would you start? Who's the first couple calls you're making? What kind of positions do you think are priority one?
I would go for a big man. I think that should be the biggest priority for them. I think the 2 things should be big man and experienced guard. And that seems like I was at least told that that was a priority by the staff. So we'll see how that goes. Like I said, they apparently have a little more NIL money to work with this year. So that in theory should help. I don't know. It just seems like we've really struggled the past few years to have like a competent, like actual 5. So I would love to see that. If they have a plan to do it with, you know, Darren Buchanan starting at the 5 and kind of playing more of this like switchable lineup, I would be here for that as well. But I think that we need someone who can, like, you know, 6'10" to 7 feet tall, who can, you know, they don't need to average, you know, 20 and 10 every game, but like if they can, you know, put the ball in the basket and play good interior defense without fouling out, like, you know, maybe sounds like a low bar, but I think that's what they need. So I would go with big man and then experience guard. And now that Max Edwards has left, it's funny, David, when you were kind of explaining the characteristics they need in a wing, I was like, oh, that's Max Edward. Like, so,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I also think it's important because, again, if you look at the guys who I mentioned, Jacoy Garrett and Darren Buchanan, those are guys I think you can all pencil in for 15 points a game. So I think that's something really interesting is, yes, you're losing James Bishop, but I don't necessarily think scoring is going to be a problem for this team based on the guys they already have. And Trey Autry is another guy who I think is going to give you some points. And so I think you want to look for, again, these more experienced guys who don't necessarily need the ball in their hands a lot, who can sort of fill in the gap through the little things. And I think the thing that, Liam, neither you or I mentioned, I think is more important than anything else is experience. I think whoever they bring in, I think you have enough guys who are committed here for the long term and who have eligibility. I think you need to get guys who have played a lot of college basketball, who have seen a lot of things on the court, and who can not necessarily be leaders, because I think Buchanan's ready to sort of step into that leadership role. I think he's gained the respect of the locker room. People really, you know, I think especially his commitment to the program, you know, him intentionally making a big deal about, you know, announcing he's staying, you know, one of the first things he said in the postgame press conference after losing in the first round of the Atlantic 10 tournament as the last seed was that he was excited to get to work for next year. And, you know, he didn't make an official announcement, but he very confidently asserted that he was coming back. So I think that, you know, people see that and notice that. And so I just think a big thing is getting people who have actual on-court experience and can sort of lead that way.
That makes a lot of sense. Just some fifth-year senior somewhere that played at Southern Illinois State somewhere, you know, that averaged 20 points a game and can come in right away and like, you know, add that kind of missing piece you lose with James Bishop going out too would be big. I think in some way, shape, or form there, we all mentioned like needing to fill out the front court, right? Whether that's sliding Darren down completely or bringing in somebody new or a little bit of both. I was wondering about this kind of as we've been going through it internally here, like, and I'd like your guys' feedback on this, is what kind of big? To me, if you're going to play Darren at like maybe even the four and he doesn't really shoot a whole lot, you know, you have shooting other places on the four on the court here, but it's hard to have like a total non-shooter unless he takes a big leap. Would you rather have a stretch big that can give them a little bit of that extra space and maybe Darren can operate a little bit more, you know, in the post and things like that too, and just kind of beat his man with quickness and athleticism? Or would you rather see more of a stretch type, you know, rim protector, lob catcher big? Because it's really hard, especially in like a mid-major league, to get somebody who can do both, stretch the floor and protect the rim. So if you've got to go either or would you try to use two spots, you know, one for each of those type of guys, like almost what like an Antoine Smith tried to bring them, but a little bit bigger, hopefully, or a stretch type?
I think a floor spacer should be the priority, 100%. I think there is no better example of a lob catcher shot blocker than Babatunde Akinbola. And I think it's fair to say at this point that that didn't really work. It was fun. You know, he was, I think he played to the best of his ability, but I just don't think it maximized the team's potential. And so I think you kind of, I've said this before, I think you need a sort of a floor spacer. I think you need someone, again, who's more switchy. And I think, that would be the best use of sort of Buchanan's talents. Because I think Buchanan has the size of a four, but I think he does play more like a five, if you get what I'm saying. And so I think finding a guy who can allow him to do that on offense is pretty key. And I think at times him and Akinbola sort of, it got a little crowded.
Ran into each other. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And so I think having a guy who can give Buchanan space to sort of go one-on-one with the guy in the post. And Buchanan's a great playmaker. He's a guy who can pass out of stuff. That way, you know, if someone does have to come in and help, he will have an open shooter around him and not someone who sort of will need to get the ball off again if they decide to leave open.
That makes sense. Liam, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think they actually missed out earlier this week on a guy that would have been great and apparently a guy that they were targeting a lot. Zach Martini from Princeton, who chose to go to Rutgers. I think he would have been awesome. I'm just trying to find his stats here. I have this huge, big sheet with all of the players that like we've contact in the transfer portal. Oh, here we go. Okay, he was only 6'7", but 37% 3-point shooter, didn't really turn the ball over that much. He was a grad student, so I think he would have been good. I mean, I don't think it's the end of the world that we missed out on him. But a player sort of like that, maybe a little bit taller, who can kind of step out and hit 3-pointers. But I don't know. I wouldn't mind like a back to the basket kind of guy who can operate in the post. I know that's I've kind of been saying that for years, and I don't really think that's a possibility. Maybe I just don't think those type of guys are going to come to GW, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I kind of have faith in whatever the coaching staff wants to, whatever they see fit. It is kind of hard when you have a player like Darren Buchanan, because he's so versatile. He can kind of be like a smaller five, and he can pass, and he can maybe shoot 3-pointers a little bit. So then you kind of need to be like, okay, well, we don't want to step on his toes. So how do you kind of find a guy that can complement his skills properly? So it's sort of like a blessing and a curse having a player like Darren Buchanan.
This is maybe a little stupid, so hear me out all the way here first, but I would treat him like Atlantic 10 Giannis, right? Sometimes you put him next to a stretch big Brooke Lopez type. Sometimes you run him at the five. Sometimes he brings the ball up. I would kind of build my team in his image, and everybody I'd be looking for in the portal would be about how you most compliment him. I would treat him as the franchise guy, essentially, and just whatever the coaching staff thinks maximizes those gifts. And you guys have mentioned a bunch of different ones. That's kind of where I would start and look for. Because Garrett, I think, fits in around everybody. Jacoy kind of does his thing. Darren's the one where I think you have to kind of make specific adjustments based on maximizing his skill set.
And Matt, I don't think that's silly at all. And you didn't mention, I think, his most valuable trait to the team, which is that he wants to be here.
Yeah,
and in the transient age, I'm being serious.
Yeah, not with it.
The fact that he was willing to commit to being here, he seems happy, even with all the losses, in the post game, speaking to him, he had a sense of optimism and an understanding of that this can get better. And so I think if he really is committed to staying at GW, I think you do whatever you can to build around that, not just to make him happy, but to understand that this is a guy who's going to grow here. And, is that he's a part of the future as much as anything. And if you can, I agree with everything you just said. I think you put it perfectly. And I think A10 Giannis, again, difficult to compare anyone to Giannis, but I think you make a lot of sense there in trying to do whatever you can to maximize his potential.
Also, keeping him happy and keeping him in the program by doing that is not the worst thing in the world here, too, because I guarantee you that's a guy that got tampered with, the last month of the season. And we saw it with maybe another local A10 team where there was some phone calls being made before the end of the year here, potentially. I can't imagine that other teams didn't also reach out to Darren about, his potential availability as well.
And I will say this, Matt, I think GW fans should be very happy with looking at the way those two situations both unfolded. I think that says a lot about the person that Buchanan is, and that he's here long term, or not long term, I guess, but he's coming back for another year. And that's all I'm going to say.
Let's tie a bow on this one here a little bit, guys. For me, looking at the amount of talent on this roster, I have faith in the coaching staff there. I think the only way I can look at this season is slightly disappointing or maybe underwhelming in terms of actual play down the stretch. I do think it was kind of a snowball effect where maybe they got a couple of those close wins early. Maybe things play out a little differently here, but I guess if you had to give a grade on the season, where would you kind of put it? Liam, why don't you start us off?
It's a good question. I would give I would give a C+, maybe. Yeah. I do think a lot of our perception of the kind of how the season went was informed by the fact that they started 14-3.
Sure.
And were kind of, whether it was a facade or not, the impression was oh, maybe this team is good.
Yeah.
And then sort of there was a few weeks of, well, no, this is a fluke. No, we're actually better than this. And then quickly people realized, oh no, wait, this is who this team is. And that's when the disappointment really kicked in. But kind of in hindsight, it wasn't entirely shocking that this is kind of what happened. It was a young team. You sort of had this impression at the beginning of the year that, like, oh, well, James Bishop, you know, he took a big step last year. Maybe he'll be able to kind of will this team to wins. And he did that a few times. But I don't know. I guess C plus is fair. But also, like, if they go in next year and they stink it up to start the season, then last year, then it's going to become a D for me. So it's, I think it's kind of about the growth that they make this offseason. And where we're at right now, I have faith that they'll make growth. But it is an important offseason, and next season will be a kind of the first season where it's like, okay, all right, finally stuff is coming together. Now what, like, now what do you do with it? So,
David, what you got?
I think it's a C. I think, yes, you saw flashes, but overall, I think the biggest thing, unless this team turns into, like, you know, Jacoy Hutchinson, Darren Buchanan, Garrett Johnson, and Trey Autry become, like, the best, you know, core in mid-major basketball, unless, like, that happens, I think it's really difficult to look at the season as anything else other than a waste of James Bishop's last year of eligibility. And he was a guy who was one of the best individual players in GW history, but was really, he won one conference tournament game in his entire GW career. Right. And so I think that it's going to be really difficult to, again, unless everything goes perfectly down the road, I think at this point, it's difficult to look at the season as anything other than sort of a failure to give him the proper send-off. And again, that can change depending on what happens. But right now, without knowing the future, I think it's really difficult to glean some immediate positives from the season. And yes, like, Buchanan looks great. Jacoy Hutchinson looks great. Looks like they're going to retain a majority of their young core. But the season was not good. They lost 12 games in a row. It was not good.
It's hard to put, like, a nice, you know, shiny polish on that piece when you think about just at the end of the day, wins and losses are what people get graded on. And they didn't do enough of that, I think, you know, commensurate with the talent they had. But there are two other bright, rising, shining stars associated with this GW program that I want to make sure that we give a minute to focus on. Ask both of you guys, as up and coming journalists in the area here, affiliated with the GW program, you guys do a great job, super professional, know your stuff. You can tell that the coaching staff, like, takes what you do very seriously because they give you very good polished answers. And there are 20-year media vets in that post-game conferences that, like, they get kind of, like, eye-rolled. And, you know, the Coach Caputo especially, I think, really welcomed what you guys brought to the table. So kudos to both of you. If people aren't following you, they should be. Liam, maybe let's start with you. Where can people find your work, social media tags, all that kind of stuff?
My Twitter is where I do, or my Twitter, my X, I kind of refuse to call it X. I'll just call it Twitter, is at LIAM_0_. So Liam Zero. I'm the guy with the, I'm probably going to change it soon, but the George Washington with the red fiery eyes. But that's where you can find my stuff on Twitter. That's where I do most of my GW basketball stuff.
David?
You can find me at David_Korn4. I do some writing for A10 Talk. That's where I get most of my articles up for. And I just want to thank the GW coaching staff as well. You mentioned that, for giving us access, for answering us thoughtfully. You know, it makes what we do a lot easier when they're doing that. And so, and Matt, thank you, by the way, as well, for your the spotlight you've shown on GW and the other local colleges this season. I know that's been a pleasure for us to see, because at times it feels like there is not enough of that. And I think you've helped fill a big void, and it's been a lot of fun to see what you've put out.
Thanks, man. No, I appreciate that a lot. And interacting with you guys has been kind of the perk of doing that. You meet cool people that know their stuff, and you can talk basketball, nerd out. And I love that. And you mentioned the coaching staff there, but also shout out to Kevin Burke, the SID for basketball at GW. The guy does an awesome job, and that's not the case at all of the programs here locally too. So he's he's one of two specifically I would kind of point to as like, this is what everybody should sort of mimic in terms of how they run their comps department. So anyway, fellas, thank you both. I'm looking forward to seeing what GW does the rest of the summer. I'd love to get you both back on here for a preview before next season. And I'm sure we'll do some other fun stuff here in between. So thank you. Good luck. And fingers crossed for your revolutionaries here in the offseason. Hopefully they make some good moves. Thanks,
guys. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the chance to come on and talk and say my piece.
Yeah, anytime. Liam looks like he's buffering here right now. So
hey, good timing.
Yeah, that worked out good. We'll close it out with that. As always, guys, please rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. We're brought to you by betonline.ag, and we will catch y'all next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.